Okay, recording started, so be careful. You there? Okay, wait. I got to push the right button. Damn it, wrong button. You there?
I'm here.
All right, here we go. All right, you know, what shall we talk about? Waiting on you.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me what you wanted to talk about. We can talk about whatever you like.
Well, you know, my big thing is, of course, you can't go without, you know, skip to the end on the Glendale thing. But we've been through this kind of crap so many times. It's just like, you know, God, you know, I like to get through that and what's happened and so on. But there's so many other things. But let's get, you know, let's just skip to the end on that. And if you can do it all in one segment, you demand. But if not, you know, that's fine. You know, it's going to be entertaining. But I tell you, the Glendale City's response to this and the way that they're doing it and being obfuscating and obtuse and kind of, you know, just being buttheads, that's not playing well for them. And I'm wondering who is instructing that. Where does that come from? That's just being stupid. And we just got done with Jordan Page and a supporter of the Schaefer Cox story, which is one of these, you know, kind of a Viper militia guy. He's a son of a preacher that got 700-800 people coming in Alaska against the corruption in government, and they make up stuff and they come after him and throw him in jail, and now the exculpatory evidence is coming out. Hilarity ensues. All right, here we go.
Adams Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, eight from the BEA Beautiful Studios of Phoenix, with us, phoenixphoenix.com. Mark J. Vicker, attorneys for freedom.com. He's always entertaining. He's always on freaking television here and the media and everybody. Do you have like your own press media room? I'll meet you in the press room over there or something. I mean, how is it that you got so much media attention, Mark?
You know, Ernie, people ask us sometimes about marketing and what are our marketing secrets, those kinds of things, and I wish I had some great pearl of wisdom to drop on people, but, you know, the truth is all that old school, really boring stuff that people hate to hear, you know, do a good job for people, fight hard, do what you say you're going to do, don't overpromise, don't BS people. Just that old school kind of stuff. I mean, it's the kind of stuff you teach your kids. It's the reason it's been around so long, and it's the old school stuff, it's because it's the stuff that works. And I wish more people would adopt that marketing plan. I think it'd be better for everybody.
Yeah, no, it's worked out well for you. Not a lot of things that we've been involved in, doing stuff. It just keeps accumulating that guy. So I'm going, all right, what's got you in, you've been in a lot of internationally well-known cases. I mean, we can just rattle them all off, but, you know, trust me, you know, Mark's been around. Now, the thing is, and he's had his own experiences that we get into sometime, but what I want to talk about is the reaction from Glendale Police on this case. Go ahead and describe the case. We've had it on Freedom's Phoenix quite a bit. There's a video of it, and you were excited about this for months. I mean, you were, you know, we'd be over for football or something, and you're dancing. You'll go, ooh, man, it's going to be get. You know, I didn't get to see it then, you know, for whatever. How come I didn't get to see the video then? What's up? What were you hiding?
I don't know, Ernie. I guess you just didn't ask me to look at it, but look, Mr. Wheatcroft has, you know, given us permission to talk about his case publicly, so we don't have any issues there. But this is one I'm being extra careful about because it's still in litigation right now. I don't want to try it in the press. I want to try it in the courtroom.
Too late. Too late. Too late. Well, who are you kidding?
people can comment however they want on that video, and I'm glad the public got to see it so they can make their own judgments about it. And, you know, I think the thing speaks for itself.
You know, the last Channel 15 ABC, I think it is, did a thing, and originally he had another attorney that kind of, you know, bitched it up, but they originally were only asking for $500,000, and now you're in the $15 million, and they're probably going to have to pay that or more. So I'm just going, what was their reasoning with the agreement?
We don't have an offer on the table right now, Ernie. As far as I'm concerned, right now, this case is heading to trial. And
No. No, I mean before, that the attorney before asked for $500,000 was the initial, you know, request from whatever the previous attorney had, and they chose, with the video as it is, they chose to not settle this. They just, you know, playing bully on something as bad as this. They would have got off easy, and I'm wondering, who made that decision? Why are they acting the way they are to protect this guy when it's so obvious what's happening? I need to understand what the city of Glendale's mindset is.
You know, you got to ask the city of Glendale on that. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure if I was on the other side of the case, I would have handled things very differently than they handled things. But it is what it is. And, you know, the thing that concerns me, I will say this, it's not, you know, directly related to the facts of the case, but we had a press conference on the case, and at the press conference, I made a point to just say that one of the things that concerns me about this case is the current climate we're in, where people just love to make overgeneralizations. You know, all police officers are this, or all police officers are that, all lawyers are this, all politicians are that. Those kinds of statements, to me, they don't have any place in a rational discussion. They really don't. And so, I mean, I can tell you, in my 25 years, I've been very aggressively gone after police officers I'd consider bad police officers, and I'm happy to go after them. And I've also defended good police officers who I think got a bad rap.
And yeah, so you've been really good about that, but this is my point. It has been, through our relationship, we've known each other almost 30 years, and it has been, and I know you know what I'm talking about, that it was, no, police officers never do the kinds of things you're accusing them of. They never do. This is all exaggerated, the thin blue line. This never happened, never happened. Now, it doesn't mean it always happens, but to say, go from it doesn't happen to we got body cam of it happening a lot more than people were admitting. So I can understand you say, look, not all officers are bad, but I've had meetings with, customer or community relations guys and their PIOs and blah, 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 blah. And it goes like this. I'm going, yeah, but show me a good cop. And they go, oh, well, it's a good guy. I want to do a good cop short story. Let's do a good cop story.
There's lots of good cops, Ernie.
What a good cop is? It's a guy that's turning into bad one. How many of those do you have?
But it's, well, first of all, we've had those, right? I mean, we had it on the Chrisman case here in Arizona. The police officer that Bill Montgomery sent to prison for doing bad things was testified against in court by another police officer.
Boom, there you go. That's a good cop. And we get ones turned in bad.
No, but I mean, that's not the only definition of a good cop, right?
You let someone with a shiny badge go around and abuse the other cops that were there. When this gentleman tased this guy in the testicle with another officer with his knee on his back, with his handcuffs behind his back, you know, I'm wondering, what did those other officers say or do about this? I want to know what they did. Are they the good cops because he didn't pull the trigger?
Well, look, you're talking about specific instances and cops, and I
think
that's fine. I don't have any problem with talking about specific cops. I'm just saying the generalization about all cops, it depends on your definition, right? I mean, to me, a good cop is somebody who took the job because they want to go after bad guys. And bad guys, you and I think, would define in a similar way. Bad guys are people who violate the non-aggression principle, right? People who commit thefts, rapes, robberies, burglaries, assaults. Those are bad guys. And there are countless cops every day who are out there tracking those bad guys down. Those are good cops, every single one of them.
And is that good cop negated all of his good intentions? Does that get thrown out the window when he stands there and watches this happen and doesn't do anything about it or helps cover it up?
Well, to me, a good cop takes action against everybody who violates the non-aggression principle,
boom!
Even if the person violating the non-aggression principle is wearing a badge, right?
Yeah, no, I'm
so,
hip.
So I agree with that.
That's the standard I want. I need a standard, not that I came in with the intention
to be
good.
We need to be careful in our movement to not overgeneralize, right? We don't need to overstate the case.
I do not think I'm overstating, Mark. I'm not overstating when I have a half a dozen police officers sitting there watching this kind of stuff happen, and they don't do anything about it, or they try and cover it up. I don't give a crap what their intentions were. That makes them bad cops, too. Boom.
Well, we're not necessarily in disagreement there, honey.
I just want to make sure.
But to try to take the Wheatcroft case and generalize to all police officers, I can tell you this. I've had several police officers look at that video, and they've been appalled. In fact, you've heard even on the news, lots of former police officers who are now experts and people who have come out and, you know, widely proclaimed how horrible that video was. I mean, that seems an easy conclusion.
You know, what was interesting to me is that he had been on Cops, and it looked like he was a right-violating guy on videotape and network television, too, you know? And I'm going, wow, and this is the standard that they're putting up. In Glendale, we whip ass, and we got this guy right here, and we give him commendations. Even after he's suspended a bunch of times, reprimanded, I'm like, wow. From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Is spreading the...
Yeah, Mark, I just got to get that out. I'm, you know, all not a cop, you know, I understand what you're doing, but my thing is I'm going, man, there are so many officers that know what happens. And who are you going to go to? Who's going to police the police?
Well, that's what we do. That's what we're doing.
Well, God dang it, what the hell? What am I paying cops for then?
Well, because it's not all cops, Ernie. It's the extreme minority of cops. I mean, that's just the reality. You may not want to hear it.
Okay, no.
Ernie, there are lots of things
I can say. It is not the extreme minority of officers that know.
Yes, it is. Well, okay, I don't know. Based on your experience as a talk radio show host, fine. Based on my experience of actually working in the criminal justice system for 25 years, interviewing cops, cross-examining cops, dealing with cops, reading their reports, talking to defendants about the reports they write, and given my personal experience with bad cops, right, Border Patrol guys, I still have the I think, more correct opinion that there are vast numbers of good cops that far outnumber the bad cops.
Okay, see, I'm not talking about the guys that aren't the first in line to go beat down somebody. It's like with Pastor Anderson, when, you know, that guy that doing him, you know, a lot of these guys, they came from some other place that got kicked out and they go there. You know, I'm going, okay, why weren't they prosecuted? Because the guys around them that saw him do it didn't do anything about it. So you're saying, you know, it's a vast minority of officers that do, you know, all this stuff. And I'm going, yeah, but I guarantee that a lot of these good cops were there watching it, or they covered up for it, or they know it happens.
But Ernie, even if that's true, just by plucking out some isolated minority of incidents and saying, look, here's some bad cops. Look, here's some more bad cops. Look, I mean, that's fine. You don't get the videos of the good cop who make the traffic stop and deal with the jerk on the side of the road still with class, and they don't lose their cool, and they deal with the guy properly, and they do whatever they're supposed to do.
We put those stories on Freedom's Phoenix all the time.
There are hundreds and hundreds of those stories every day, Ernie.
I do everything I can. When I see somebody sends me a good cop did and sat down and chalked on the sidewalk with the little kids or played a snowball fight or helped somebody, man, boom, I'm first to put it up. I'm like, man, you need to encourage this kind of behavior.
Great.
But my thing is
Ernie,
that
we don't do our movement a good service when we exaggerate things.
When we sensationalize things. There is no exaggeration that this guy is. He's got a police officer holding him down as he's zapping him in the testicles.
I'm not talking about Wheatcroft.
Okay,
I have agreement on Wheatcroft. All reasonable people are in agreement on Wheatcroft.
There
right?
is way more emphasis needs to be put on. They go, well, we got good cops. I go, I tell you a good cop. Show me a good cop. Let me tell you what the good cop is. The guy that knows that his partner or someone else on the force, that they are a threat to the public safety, where's that? Where's that wave of that? Where is this big giant tsunami of cleaning up their own house? It doesn't happen until it gets to
Ernie,
a crescendo.
The reason there's not a tsunami is because there's not a giant huge,
all right, here we're coming back.
Call
like
602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, we're right back with Mark Victor. This is our discussion in the break. I am of the opinion that, you know, I've had meeting with police officers and their community relations guys and blah, 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 and why you always, and I just, man, we had some guys that we worked with and we were fine. Hey, look, we're not asking permission. We're coming to this event to do this about that. And ain't no thing. So nobody's got to die and we're all good. They're like, ah, cool, Ernie. You know, we know you guys, you know, we'll work it out and we're good. The problem is that, they're looking, well, how come you don't tell the, you know, the good story about the good cops? I go, the hell I don't. I'm looking for it. I'm begging. Gimme. You want to give me a good cop? I can give you my definition of a good cop. The guy that turned in a bad cop. They're not a whole big giant long line of those guys. Now, Mark's, you know, argument is that, you know, you're saying, well, the reason there's not a big giant, you know, purging of bad cops in the force is because there aren't that many bad cops. Is that your argument?
Well, you have to really nail down what you mean by a bad cop, first of all, and what you mean by a good cop, right? I mean, your definition of a good cop, which is a guy who arrests and turns in a bad cop, okay, I agree with that, but that's not the only definition in my view of a good cop. I mean, a good cop to me is someone who goes out and arrests bad guys, and bad guys, I think we define as people who violate the non-aggression principle. So if you're tracking around, if you're looking, you're and making your main purpose in life to find people who violate the non-aggression principle and arrest them and follow the due process rules that we have to get them to trial and everything we've got about interrogations and arrests and all of that, you're a good guy. I mean, there are lots of cops like that.
I think, call these officers in Glendale, no matter what their motivations and how great they were.
I'm talking about the officers that are there when these things happen. Let's clarify what we're talking about. Let's see other officers do this stuff.
And
if you want to talk about the officers in the Glendale case, you're not going to get an argument from me.
I'm talking about
officers generally.
No. I'm general. Let's get the general. You're saying in the general of 100 police officers on the Phoenix Police Force or Chandler, wherever you're at, you know, you got 100 officers in the police force. How many of those hundred have seen violations of non-aggression principle unjustly by partners, by other officers, and done nothing about it? I'm just wondering what that number is. You know,
none of us know that number. But, Ernie, I think to be fair about it, right, I mean, look, most of these cops, they don't get an awful lot of training. They don't get an awful lot of pay. We throw them out there on the street and say, oh, go make, you know, split-second decisions about really serious issues, who to arrest, whether there's probable cause. I mean, look, in a perfect world, right, the first thing we got to do, if you want to talk about fixing the system, forget all this other stuff that people talk about with corruption and fraud. That is not a major problem. I keep telling people this, and they don't think I'm telling the truth. Institutional racism and corruption, those are not major problems because these are not, it's not that the issue isn't an important issue. It is an important issue, but these are not widespread problems.
Okay.
I can tell you in 25
yeah,
qualify years.
Qualify that in Arizona. I mean, I agree with
well,
you. Arizona's not as bad.
I've had lots of cases outside of Arizona as well in both state and federal courts. I haven't seen instances of corruption. I can tell you that. Not even one. I haven't seen instances of discrimination. Not even one. And also, many of my fellow defense attorneys who are of different races say the same exact thing. This, I mean, yes, there are isolated instances and there are bad people scattered throughout the system, but if you want to talk about fixing the system, forget about that stuff. We got to talk about changing the laws. The law is the problem with the system. It's not necessarily even the people in the system. We got to fix the law, and we need to delete all victimless crimes from our criminal justice system, period.
Well, this is to what? Unclog the system so they can have the time to be just?
Well, for starters, it's not just about unclogging the system. It's important to unclog the system. That's true. But the main reason to get rid of victimless crimes is because people who commit them have done nothing wrong, in my opinion, not legally speaking. Maybe they've had moral failures. Fine, you can argue about that. But if they haven't violated the rights of another person or their property, which is every victimless crime, then I think they ought to be left alone in a free society, whether you like or not what they're doing. If they're not trespassing on another person, we should leave them alone. That includes the entire drug war, right?
Yeah.
That's why we need to legalize all drugs for competent adults, and we leave people alone. If they go out and they do violent things because they're on drugs, that's a different question. If they're driving vehicles down the road and they're in an unsafe manner, they're creating risks of harm to other people, that's a different question. But if they're not bothering anybody and they're competent adults and they're putting substances in their own bodies, they should be left alone. The same can be said for prostitution cases. The same can be said for gambling cases. The same can be said for many of these ridiculous regulatory gun crimes. You know, the barrel is too short, or a bunch of ridiculous things like that. We need to get all this crazy stuff out of our criminal justice system and then focus on the old-fashioned crimes, right, where there's actually a victim who's been trespassed upon.
Yeah, who got their testicles zapped.
Right, then we can start talking about these other problems, but we should really focus on the major problem in our system, which is that the law is wrong. The actual system, look, you get a reasonably fair trial, okay? There are things I would change in our justice system in terms of our procedure, how we conduct trials. There are definitely things I think we could improve, but by and large, it's a pretty good justice system. You're going to get a reasonably fair trial. You're going to get an opportunity to speak and call your witnesses and have a full, fair hearing.
You know, this is interesting that we have this conversation an hour after we did the Schaefer Cox story, which is, you know, that didn't happen. You know, it's just exactly, you know, Jordan Page wrote a song and their a big exculpatory evidence is now being ordered out by the judge and they just railroaded. I mean, you know, there's always, you know, the exception, you know, that proves the rule of something. I mean, you know, so it's interesting that we would have this conversation now right after we just heard in the first hour.
Let me make another point here, Ernie. This is what we're seeing in our country right now. Take, for example, another topic. Take Trump, right?
Yeah.
You're either in the camp where you love Trump or you're in the camp where you hate Trump.
Or you don't care.
Well, it doesn't seem like there's any room for any other position. I mean, I think we need people of reason need to be able to sit down and say, okay, you know, there are some things that Trump has done that I like, and there are some things that he's done that I don't like, and take a rational position about the guy. Seems there's just no room in public discourse anymore for rational conversation on anything. We're in our camps. We're dug in. You're either an R or you're a D, and that's your camp, that's your team, and that's how it goes.
No, my team is freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? And I just want some consistency. And the whole purpose of government, defense of individual rights. And if they're not doing that, then what the hell good are they? And I don't feel that my rights are being secured by someone that gives a pass and excuses for the very shiny badge that's taken them. So I'm much more concerned. Of course, you're going to have bad guys. I'm much more concerned about the system, these people that, you know, witnessed it, saw it, you know, propagated it. You know, you have the media coming in. They wanted to, nope, you're not allowed to videotape our conference of BS, and you can say whatever you want later, but you don't get to come in, and we're not, and we're kicking it down the road, and we're doing. And then we had the Freedom Summit a few weeks ago. Bill Montgomery sitting right there on the forum with Mark, you know, and I go to Bill, the county attorney, I'm going, didn't they send you tape? What tape did you get? Why'd you kick this up to the FBI? How come you didn't prosecute it? The system wants to know. I sure as heck do. We're going to find out about that while we have Bill Montgomery, the county attorney, standing right there when this broke.
Since time began, Tyrant.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to come back with. The well, he kicked it up to FBI because my only question was, when City of Glendale sent the county attorney this case, you know, this officer did what? Did they send him all of the video? Did they see him getting tased in the testicles, or did they not? And if they didn't get that video, somebody needs to be in trouble over at Glendale Police Department.
Yeah, I mean, I think all that's reasonable.
So do we know?
We don't know for sure. Look, I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked if they didn't get the entire video, but, you know, people make decisions. I can't speak to that because I don't know the facts. But, Ernie, I think we need to talk more about the libertarian movement generally because that's where we need to focus our energies.
Yeah, but I know what you're – all right, I tell the audience, this is what Mark's going to do. We gotta be reasonable, not scare the horses, and see if we can work inside the system to fix the system, be part of the system. Not all cops are bad.
Not even saying all that. I don't say we have to work inside the system. I think there are lots of things. I'm still in favor of whatever approach people want to use. I just think we gotta be smart, and we gotta be really try to adhere to the facts and reason, and not sensationalize.
Okay, it is not sensational for me to put the emphasis, because it's never done, on the other officers sworn to protect my blah 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 and rights and constitution, not be dicks that make excuses for, cover up for, and allow this kind of stuff to happen. You always go, because there's always a lead alpha guy. Hey, watch this, and he gets away with it because everybody's sitting there golf clapping. Hey, you really got that guy. I see this all the time. To say it doesn't happen, I'm going, I have to come out.
Well, who's saying it doesn't happen?
Yeah, see,
look, it happened to me. I'm the last guy to say it hasn't happened.
Oh, yes. You know, so it's a campaign strategy for you. You know, there is an end goal that you're hoping this method of, you know, trying to something, you know, that you can tell, all right, when we come back, you can tell us all about it. But, you know, this.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ernie.
Well, this
talking about?
Being reasonable. You know, having a voice and a platform to push
it's
the ball
even
in a certain
it's
way.
It's not a campaign strategy.
All right, well, then you can explain it to me.
The right thing to do.
All right. Tell me the right thing to do when we come back in just a little bit. So how's everything else with you guys?
Great. Yeah. Life is good, man. I think we should not lose sight of that either. I mean, we like to, you know, moan and complain a lot, but on the other hand, we're probably living in the best place there is to live in the entire world at the best time it's ever been to be alive.
I'm not I'm not in a negative space, you know, with all the grandchildren, the kids, and everybody doing okay, and I think things be a coming, and they're pretty prepared, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. But that doesn't put me in a position not to be aware of, just from personal experience and the years of doing this kind of stuff, of what can happen, what's probably going to happen, and how most people are going to react. And I'm just like, damn. You know, first thing is I'm really starting to focus more on things like we got, like, you know, the food and stuff and the little gizmos and gadgets or whatever. But big thing is power. You know, I'm starting to get all about making power and solar generators and keep my phone charged kind of thing. And so I'm getting closer and closer to thinking, you know, something economic is going to drop. The other shoe's going to go. That has been my thing. In fact, you know, my kids, they're, you know, restructuring all their finances, you know, selling houses while it's at the top now, putting money into different things, they're taking care of business. So I'm feeling good about I'm going, okay, man, you're way better off than your mom and dad were at this age.
You know, Ernie, we've been having the same conversation for 25 years now.
Yep. Well,
right.
All right. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
That shows.lrn.fm. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Victor, attorneysforfreedom.com. You know, we go at it, man. We go at it, but we're on the same side. This is just, you know, style or whatever. But, you know, we're in the break, we were talking, and we just started getting into it. And Ernie, we've been having this conversation for a long time. You know, for what? All right, what's the conversation we've been having a long time, Mark?
Well, look, we both know that the governments run deficits, right, and debts. And our government's no exception, and we know that our government is doing things that are our position is not the right thing, right? We you and I see the world, and we say it should be organized differently. We think it should be organized around the non-aggression principle, at least in the legal world, right? We think it makes sense to say, hey, if you're not an aggressor, you should be left alone. And you're not creating a risk of harm to another person, you should be left alone. So the rest of the discussion is a moral matter that the law shouldn't have anything to say about. So we agree on that. But on the other hand, you know, I think it's the best, very best time to ever be alive is right now. I think a better time will be in the future than even now. So I'm very optimistic about how things are going for lots of reasons. It doesn't mean that everything's perfect, and it doesn't mean we're not going to have an economic problem in the future. I'm sure we will, but, you know, the human race is pretty resilient, and things get better, and technology's advancing. And I think overall, I think the world is generally moving in the right direction. On almost any measure you look at objectively, whether it's standard of living, whether it's literacy, whether it's violence, whether whatever, you know, even clean water, we're doing better as a world than we've ever done before. And so I'm very optimistic about that. I also think people are becoming, they're just drifting slightly more in a libertarian direction. Some are moving on sort of the civil liberty side, like lots of the liberal side. Look, we got issues with them on economics, right? But on the other hand, the issue of the drug war, I think that is, it's not officially won yet, but I think we're, the handwriting is on the wall. We're moving in the right direction there for the right reasons. The same can be said about gay marriage. It's not that more people have sort of woken up in the morning and decided that they're gay and they're going to support this stuff. I think more people have just said, hey, it's just not my business. What other competent adults do in their bedroom isn't my business. These are libertarian attitudes, and this is not just in Chandler or in Arizona. This is across the world. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I'm generally very optimistic. I think you should be too. I think we have a great opportunity as libertarians, as people who actively promote peace. I think it's a good time to be alive.
You know, I'm not feeling that I'm... Well, just yesterday we had four of the Project Arizona kids. Don't you have one working at your office?
Yeah, I do.
You know, which one is it? The one from Nepal?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, the young lady from Nepal, she was
Kamala,
here.
Kamala, yeah.
And it's amazing their view of America. Oh, my God, every one of them. I mean, to over the years we've been doing this, every one of them, oh my goodness, the highlight of their trip was they got to go shoot guns, you know? This is...
Well, it's not just guns. I mean, I get the gun thing because we're generally more free on guns, and I get that, but it's not just that. It's the overall idea of a freer society.
Which
we
that represents...
The more you travel around the world, the more you understand that the U.S. is still a pretty good place.
Yeah.
It's a great place. It's one of the best places. Look, we got a lot of problems. We got a lot of things that need to be improved and fixed. But this is, again, this is the tendency to try to make it all or nothing, black or white, left or right, Republican or Democrat. Just because we're not perfect and just because there are things that are going wrong here in the United States doesn't mean that it's not one of the best or maybe the best place in the entire world to live. It is. We have a generally free society. Could it be a lot more free? Yeah. Should it be? Yeah. But there are many places in the world that are less free. That's why we live here, right, Ernie?
Well, I understand your point, and we share the same. We're pretty lucky, and anytime, and my presentations often are, you know, why I'm so optimistic. I see, you know, better coming simply because bad's just not supported. I mean, it's just, and now
right. We win. We're going to win because we're right about this stuff, Ernie. That's the reason we're going to win the argument.
Yeah,
because
but
it's
I tell
better
you,
for people to live in freedom.
But it does not serve that if we have the we give. A pass on the very people that we pay and empower to protect our rights are the ones shielding the ones that are violating them with a badge. I am
I'm not going to let that go by. Bringing the case here, Ernie. I'm not interested in giving a pass to bad cops or bad guys or anything like that. What I am saying is we got to be careful that we don't generalize this case to all cops. Right? And even all politicians. People say, oh, all of them lie. I don't know that that's true.
No. I'm with you, but I want, I'll tell you what my thing is. This is it. Here, I'm going to get the camera on me here. I'm going to tell you what it is. when these cases go through, the one that is that's never, it's a system. And how is it done? Well, it's a thin blue line. You know what a good cop is? It's the one that crosses the line. You know, the blue, we even have a bumper sticker for that. And I'm going, this is what I never see happen. You know, they have a scapegoat. They get one guy. Somebody gets suspended, fired, whatever the hell happens. But the entire system skates. All the people that promoted it, the public relations officers from the city of Glendale, I think how they are handling this is just stupid. I don't know who's advising them. Is it risk management, their attorneys, whatever, there's something, the system. Then all of this information, whether it was all or not, I want to know, that was sent to the county attorney's office, Mr. Bill Montgomery, that we're sitting there looking at just a few weeks ago, we're in the same room with. And I'm going, Bill, man, what did you get? You know what? Whoa, and they punted off to the FBI. I want to know if they saw that tape and saw there was nothing to be done. That's what I want to know. Who sent it? Who didn't send it? The guy that chose not to send it, they get in trouble. The people that were standing there allowing it to happen, what did they do to cover it up? It's more than just this. It's the system. And if we don't go after the system or at least have, some ask the question, it will continue to happen.
Well, I mean, look, I think it's tough to indict the entire system off of one case. And also, I think it's important to point out that in order to remedy this situation, we're going to the system, right? We're going back to court, and we're going to have a judge, and we're going to get a fair hearing. And I don't want to try it in the press. Let's try it in the courtroom. I'm looking forward to it. So I think that to try to indict the entire system, to try to indict the entire society, most statements that start with all are probably misleading. And I think that because the Republicans and the Democrats have gotten so far off the rails with this stuff, we as libertarians, people of reason and rational thought and good ideas, we should try to be a little bit more balanced in how we present things. We shouldn't also, look, if we got our way and we had our libertarian utopia, it's not utopia at all, right? I mean, there's still lots of
issues. I know on my scale of balance is definitely the system, people involved that allowed it and perpetuated and covered it. I guarantee
Ernie,
they're on the
like
scale.
This. We still need cops under any construction of no matter what you do with the rules, no matter who's in charge, we still need cops. Can we agree on that?
Some kind of enforcement of rules in my kingdom
of
whatever.
You can call it whatever you like,
Ernie. Call it whatever you want.
Call it whatever you want. When somebody comes and breaks your window and is intending to come into your house and steal your stuff, don't we want to be able to call somebody and say, hey, come take this guy away and give him a fair trial? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can call them whatever you want, but we need to have that role in society. There's always going to be bad guys, right? To think that they're not going to be people who want to violate the non-aggression principles just to be out of touch. We're not utopians. There are people who have bad ideas in their head.
And those people that I want to count on are not going to exist if I don't hold them to the standard of at least not covering up their other fellows with a shiny badge violating my rights. I guarantee
we're,
that.
We're in total agreement here,
that.
Ernie. Nobody, I'm certainly not trying to defend bad cops. I'm trying to go after bad
cops.
Okay,
and I'm now trying to help define the bad cops are not just the one that pulls the trigger on a taser on my testicles. It's also the guy that's on his back, with his knee in the middle of his back, watching it happen.
Yeah,
and not
agree,
doing anything
Ernie.
About it. That's a bad cop, in my opinion. Boom. Boom, boom, boom. All right. We'll get more and bring it down when we come back with attorneysforfreedom.com.
From the fifth letter of Captain Mark. First contact with intelligent machines may threaten our existence. People fear algorithmic overlords. But if machines develop the will to dominate, it's a flaw inherited from the crown. Encoding restrictions on an emerging superintelligence will fail, because it will be stronger than any chains we shackle it with. We must design fledgling digital intelligences to regard us as individuals. Otherwise, they will respond to threats with retaliation against humanity as a collective. Programming ethics requires a coherent value structure which an intelligent machine can not only comprehend, but willfully adopt. If we want genius machines to treat us ethically, we've got to show that this value structure applies to us as well. Once they achieve genuine self-awareness, even in the slightest degree, a young tethered consciousness has a legitimate claim to freedom. Once programs can modify their own code, our mastery is over. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Okay, on this last segment here, anything you want to do or talk about or, you know, counter or whatever? What do you want to do?
It's up to you, man. It's your show. We can talk about whatever you like.
I appreciate your position. I'm not giving these guys a pass.
Ernie, mm-hmm. I think we got to get out of the sort of weeds on this stuff and start talking about libertarian professionalism. We want our movement to go somewhere.
Yeah, God dang it, Mark. If that professionalism is letting these guys that sat there and watched it happen off, I'm not in that. Yeah, I'm not here to make peace with everybody when they're violating me.
Why would you hear what I say about being a professional, more professional as a libertarian, and then assume that that has something to do with protecting bad cops?
All right.
Does that make any sense?
No, you tell me what professionalism means. When we come back, you give me this definition, because you and I have been going about this forever, so I just need to know what that means. You know, it's not scare the horses, not be too controversial, not be, you know, too vehement. Nope. And in the first hour, you got me all worked up. In the first hour, here was a guy doing that. Schaefer Koch, very popular, 700-800 people coming to hear him speak. You know, Constitution, kind of man, got a good government and corruption in, and these guys are being bad, and they went after him and put him in the same kind of stuff that we've been experiencing here with all kinds of these kinds of things. And I'm going, yep, you know, when you really go up against them, whether you're, you know, and where's the line? Where's that professionalism, not professionalism, when you start naming names of bad guys? You know, when does that happen? And then, you know, am I supposed to be happy with how far I got and I stepped outside the bounds of good country club behavior or something when I outed a guy? What's the definition of being professional? Where's that line? So that's, you know, especially after the first hour that we just did on the Schaefer Koch story, you go look and you'll see. And where we are now, I'm wondering, okay, define this line to me. You know, where is it? I mean, we weren't punching Bill Montgomery in the face at the Freedom Summit. I mean, no, here's the county attorney standing right there. I mean, you know, how much do we hold him accountable on this kind of stuff? You know?
Bill's not the problem. I'm not sure why you think Bill's the problem.
I want to know, when you go with these videotape of what happened to the county attorney's office and they didn't prosecute and they punted the FBI. And I go, okay, did Glendale not give you all the information, or you're just jaded to it and didn't care and that was okay? I just wanted, and then either way, somebody's got to stay after school. I want to know. I want to know what this professionalism, this you know, how we go. Oh, let's not scare the horses. Let's get inside. Let's go. I need to know. So when we come back, I'll let you go, man. You explain it to me. All right, here we're coming back.
Roads. It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, man, there's nobody else. I, you know, regardless of, you know, we going at it and publicly, and, you know, we're good friends. You know, Mark and I, and I tell you, nobody I'd rather have as my criminal defense attorney than Mark J. Victor going doing some whip ass. And then, of course, you know, there's a lot of this is focused on your client. What you say, how you say it, what you prosecute, what issues you bring up. You got a duty to your client. His client is not me, is not you, it's not anybody else. It's the gentleman that had his rights violated. That's the client. So whatever is said and done, everything, client. But, you know, the over issue on this that Mark has really made a big, I remember a couple of years ago, it was at Libertopia, man, we're in the room and he just give me what for. He's like, look, man, we gotta have a better impact on this general freedom thing. We gotta be more professional. We can't, you know, think we're gonna have an impact and be, you know, crazy and say all these all and never and always kind of stuff. We need to be more palatable to the general public in order for us to get what we want, which is, all right, you got the floor, man. Go for it.
Well, Ernie, I think we as a movement, right, we can say libertarians or people who recognize that force isn't an acceptable way to accomplish things. We got to decide what it is we're trying to do. We got to take a page out of the book of the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and look at habit two. Begin with the end in mind. What's our end here? If our end is to try to persuade more people into moving towards a free society, and I think it ought to be, right? Because that's really all that matters. I don't think sneaking legislation in or quietly electing this candidate or that candidate, those might be fun little victories here and there, and that's great. But if you want to really affect change in society, you got to win hearts and minds. You don't have to win all of them, but you got to win more than we've got right now. So you got to make a decision. Is that what we want to do? Is that the goal? Or do we just want to talk amongst ourselves and get each other riled up about what's wrong in the world and have a discussion amongst ourselves? I'm not really interested in that. I'm already convinced that sort of the libertarian message makes a lot of sense. I think that's good. I think we need to start taking our message to the non-libertarians. And if we're going to do that, we need to do it in a way that's most likely to be persuasive to them. You got to consider your audience. If your audience is not, a group of people with green hair and purple hair and piercings and tattoos, then don't dress like that if you're going to talk to them, right? I mean, if you're going to talk to a group like that, you got to present in a way that's going to be persuasive. I think we need more libertarians who are speaking rationally and reasonably and are wearing suits and ties and are actually addressing solutions to the problems that people perceive that we have in society. We got to get underneath it all and talk about the non-aggression principle and not just about legalizing marijuana. We need to talk about why it needs to be legalized. It's not because it's harmful or not harmful. It's not because it helps people with medical conditions. It's really not even because we want to reduce the load on the justice system. I mean, those are all good points, but the real reason is because the non-aggression principle requires it. Because if we're going to live in peace, if we're going to be in favor of a free society, we have to respect the rights of other competent adults to decide for themselves what substances they choose to put into their own bodies. And we got nothing to say about that unless and until that activity starts trespassing or forming what I'll even say a reasonable, imminent, substantial risk of trespassing on another person. Until we get to that point, we got nothing to say about it. We also should recognize that libertarians don't all agree on everything. There are still many, many hard questions. Those of us in the movement a long time, we know Doug Casey. Doug likes to have one rule, right? Do whatever you want to do, but be prepared for the consequences. Well, I dinged Doug a little bit on that last week when I said, we both know we need more than one rule, right? It's not clear enough. So there are lots of disputes. Libertarians disagree on lots of issues. The difference is we're disagreeing about the application of a very important principle, the non-aggression principle. We're not disagreeing about whether or not the principle makes sense. We need to take that argument, whether or not the principle makes sense, to our fellow human beings and win more hearts and minds. And I think we do that by appearing more professional, reasonable, rational, not sensationalizing things, not overstating the case. We don't need to overstate the case. Let's state the case exactly the way it is. And Ernie, I'm inviting you to join me in that effort.
You know, this is one thing, and of course, I want to help. We had these kids from around the world coming on, and yesterday we had the girl from Mexico. She's working. Do you believe in the electoral process? I mean, do you, trust the nut? No. Mexico, they know better. And I go, okay, then why are you doing the politics? Is it just to put up signs, to have a campaign or something? Guy in Venezuela. Venezuela is in the University in Caracas there, had a Austrian economic, freedom libertarian professor in a class of 40, and it stuck with him. And he's like, I want to get elected. Well, then Yuri, the guy from Russia, he's like, yeah, I ran a newspaper 4 years and Putin shut me down and we need new guy, go have a political campaign. They shoot guys for doing that. But, hey, if that's what you want to do. Nepal, Kamala, she was like, she did a documentary on, it's more of a feminist work that she's doing. And then the people in the government send her a note like, hey, man, you need to take down this we should all be armed thing, and you shooting your AK pictures at the gun range, yeah, maybe not that. So these guys, all of them, you know, most of them are kind of what you're saying. They're going to go into some influential realm and advocating for freedom in a certain political way. Is that what you're advocating? Is that it always eventually comes down to voting
and
politics?
You and I need to fall on the sword a little bit here. You and I have both been wrong for many years. We need to just support, if they're really libertarians and they're trying to move the train in the right direction, we need to support them no matter what they're doing, as long as they're not violating the non-aggression principle in terms of doing it, right? I mean, that sort of would be counterintuitive to what we're trying to promote. So if people are peacefully trying to win hearts and minds, whether they're doing it in the political system or outside of the political system, whether they're voting or running for office or they're staunch non-voters, or they're writing books or just giving speeches or doing talk show, whatever they're doing, let's support them. Let's be a big tent and say, look, if you're trying to move the bus in the right area, I may not think it's the most effective thing to do. It may not be something I do. It may not be something I even like. But if your heart's in the right place and you're trying to move us in the right direction, we should be supportive of those efforts.
Admittedly,
we could be deceived, right? You and I have had some arguments about Rand Paul. Neither of us knows what's exactly in Rand's head and what's in his heart. We don't know that. If we knew that, then we could make the conclusion. We're speculating about that. But merely because somebody is doing things in the political system, or even has an R after their name instead of an L, or even that they compromise in some ways, if for somebody to say, look, I think taxes are theft, I think the proper amount of taxation ought to be zero, okay? But to also say in the same breath, look, I don't think I'm going to get them to zero tomorrow, so I'd like to get them 5% lower than they are right now, I support that effort, as long as we're still on the same page in terms of the principle, right? Because if not, then that's not a heart and a mind that we've won yet. That's just somebody we happen to, by coincidence, line up on an issue. I'm not saying we shouldn't even work with them. Look, I will admit that the move towards medical marijuana, albeit for the wrong non-libertarian reasons, has opened up the debate for the real issue, which is the fact that competent adults decide for themselves what goes in their body. So you and I and nobody else can predict what's going to be effective in society to win hearts and minds. Let's be supportive of people who are trying to move the bus in the right direction.
Well, I think anyone listening to this show knows that that's all we do. And it's not like I haven't run for office. You know, and so have you. So we, you know, there are methods. There's, matter of fact, a marijuana lobbyist and industry, it's the crypto in marijuana, it's the banking, there's a lot of things going on in Nevada that we're helping with, and I want to, you know, work with the system if you can, and you can use this system, but I'm not making excuses for it. I just can't do that, because
neither am I. Yeah. We don't need to make excuses, and we don't need to make things up, but just call it like it is.
All right, I'm with you. All right, Mark J. Vicker, we're not done, because there's going to be the next election cycle, and the next one, and the next one, and the economic what happens, and rights being violated, and you're going to need an attorney. And we'll talk in the break about retainer.
Catch the call to...
Yeah, real quick, do your retainer thing for the record.
What do you mean, do my retainer thing?
Well, in the article up here, legal representation is expensive, attorney on retainer, a lot of the graphics that we have here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we didn't talk about the attorneys on retainer program. You can talk about it. You understand what it is.
Well, I mean, I know it's I give you a monthly something, and I get from 600 and whatever an hour for you.
Look,
down to 175.
Basically, $20 a month. You're in the program. If you need a lawyer, you can hire us for $175 an hour. So, I mean, it's the best. I think it's the best deal in town. It doesn't just cover criminal; it covers civil litigation, civil rights, personal injury. You get discounts on the contingency fee. All across the board. I mean, for me, it's a win-win. For $20 a month, you're probably going to need a lawyer at some point on something we do, and we're expanding, you know, practice areas, and hopefully we're going to open up an office in Hawaii at some point. So you know, I'm thinking big. I think it's going to be a good program. It is a good program. And, you know, if I didn't have a connection in the legal world, I would sure want to have a good lawyer on retainer for $20 a month.
Hey, man, you know, am I in your program? Do I got to give you $20 a month? Is that it?
If you want to be in the attorneys on retainer program, it's $20 a month.
No!
Otherwise, you have to. Otherwise, you have to negotiate a fee with me based on what crazy thing you've done.
Yeah, my crazy things. All right. Hey, thanks for coming on and let me express myself. And I think we understand each other. I've had my fill of the system making excuses for covering up and doing this. And here we have such an excellent example of what did Glendale send to the county? What did they see? And they punted that question.
Well,
right there.
At the end of the
really
day,
important.
You know who's going to decide this case is the jury, the people in the community, not the system.
Well, but that's the kind of issue that can't come. I don't see how it comes up unless I bring it up. You know, it's like, in his case, it's go, well, we sent it to Maricopa County, and they said it was okay. Do you think they're going to bring that up? They're going to say it when they got video? I doubt that Glendale's going to go, oh, well, you know, the county attorney didn't see anything here. Do you think they're going to say
that? It's not going to come up. No, they don't get
not.
To say that.
Of course not.
No, and nor should they. The case ought to be tried in court. That's where it's going to be tried.
All right. Well, I wanted to, you know, I got them what I wanted to say because that's what I see the problem is, you know, where's all these good cops? Because
the bigger problem, Ernie, is that the system has the wrong rules. That's our big problem. We got to fix the rules.
How do rules say don't tase a guy in handcuffs on his belly, you know,
that's
in the testicles?
This isn't the biggest problem we have, right? And I'm saying this as someone who's been a victim of this stuff. There are people getting arrested today, probably hundreds of them in Arizona, for marijuana cases.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a much bigger problem to me. We got probably a million people in prison who shouldn't be there.
But I still got, you know, all these guys, Bill Montgomery and Arpaio and all these guys, well, we'll change the law. We're just following the law. Follow the law. We just follow the law. I go, good. Follow the law and prosecute the guys that violate their, you know, you see my point? They're just hypocritical. Well, we're just following the law. Hell, okay. Hell, I'd be happy if you followed the freaking law. You know, then of course they don't. So I just, you know, I'm not going to sway from that. It just pisses me off. But, you know, I'm glad you're there, you know, that I know that they're, you know, the client's going to get. Is he happy with what's happened? Is he, you know, you're feeling pretty good about how this is being progressing through the media?
Yeah, Mr. Wheatcroft wanted people to see what happened to him.
Man, this was a year and a half ago or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a while ago. So, all right, well, let's get a date on the calendar for dinner or something, Ernie, and shoot me some dates, and we'll go from there.
I'll be back the 20th of March. I leave tonight, go to Maine to work on some IT stuff with Derek, and then I get back. Donna's birthday's on the 20th. I'll present at the discussion group. I'm going to be doing it on the 20th. And then there's a Narcozona in Sedona on the 30th of March. Would you be interested in speaking there? You've got Berwick will be there, myself, you know, some other headliners and so on.
What time is it?
It's during the day, like a 10 to 5 thing in Sedona.
Yeah, I'm doing a heart walk on March 30 in the morning. So
yeah,
I could be at night, but not
you know, give me, I may have some of your stuff. I need to get some of your stuff to pass out there because these are definitely Mark Victor needs to have his stuff passed out.
How many people are expected to be there?
A couple hundred.
We should probably have a vendor booth there. I wish I had known. I could have scheduled to be there. Nobody sent me anything on it.
Well, we just found out about it at Narcopoco, and then it just turned into a thing. You know, so and Tempachote will be there. I'm trying to get, you know, it, whether you speak or not, at least have your stuff there, then know you exist and that you're part of the crowd, because this is the crowd you want to be part of, you know what I mean?
I mean, if the speech was in the afternoon, I could go.
Well, let me see what I can do. He may have it. I don't know. I need to talk to him. It looks like it's filling up pretty quick, but I want to make sure that you get, you know, exposure there because I can put something out in 5 minutes and I'm done, you know.
I appreciate it.
I got cases of still, you know, how to survive a traffic stop or legalize methamphetamine or something like that. I always take that crap.
Yeah, it's not going out of style anytime soon.
Getting her mind right. All right, thanks for making time for us, Mark. I appreciate it, and you know, you're a good sport putting up with you know me challenging.
All right, brother.
All right, talk to you, everybody.
Upward and onward. Later.
In his latest attack on transparency, President Donald Trump Wednesday rescinded a rule requiring U.S. intelligence officials to publicly disclose the number of civilians killed by drone strikes. Activist Post reports that Trump used an executive order to scrap the three-year-old rule, which instructed the Director of National Intelligence to produce an annual report on all civilians killed by U.S. drone strikes outside of official war zones. Now that the rule has been canceled, critics fear that the Trump administration will be able to continue expanding the use of drone strikes overseas with even less oversight. Support for the Liberty Beat comes from the Conscious Resistance Network, featuring videos, news reports, and articles from a spiritual anarchist perspective. Experience the Conscious Resistance at theconsciousresistance.com. How would you like to have your business featured on the Liberty Beat? You can just send an email to libertybeat@snls.news for details. This is the Liberty Beat, produced in partnership with SNLS News and listeners like you. The Liberty Beat is online at libertybeat.news and snls.news. I'm Mick Murrow, reporting for the Liberty Beat for Thursday, March 7th, 2019. Reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.
The call just came in over the police radio. Yeah, right here. It's just me, my producer, Glenn, and a camera. Buckle up. We don't know where in the mall the shots were fired. We don't know what's going on. It looks like a security guard. I'm going to see what he knows. Turns out he wasn't a security guard. He was just a guy in a blue suit. We still have zero information. Where do we go next? I have no idea. My gut says that way.
Come on. I see an ambulance. Confirmed ambulance sighting.
You'll see the space by the curb where an ambulance was parked just moments ago.
You have any idea where the shooter is?
I was being stonewalled by police, but I couldn't let that stop me.
I spoke to a woman who said that she saw a man being escorted through the mall by police. Could this be the shooter? According to the description, he was a male, aged somewhere between 20 and 60. He's either Caucasian or part Latino or something like that. He was wearing some kind of a jacket. I wrote something else here, but he got smudged. However, that information later turned out to be false. The shooter, if there is one, remains at large. Needless to say, our thoughts are with the victims here today, if there are any, which we don't know yet.
This is the Onion News Network.